Okay. Who was the Rabbeinu Tam? As we make our way through our Masara, where did we come from? Where are we heading? What's your place in the Masara? Not just interested in knowledge and information. Some of you may spend more time in yeshiva, less time, but this is your chance to feel that this is something you're part of and receiving, maybe hopefully one day contributing to and perpetuating as well. So Rashi had no sons, but he had several daughters. One of his daughters was named Yocheved. Easy enough to remember, Moshe's mother. This Yocheved married Rashi's son, Meir. And Yocheved and Meir had three, what? Yocheved and Meir had three children.
Who's
Meir's
son?
What? So three children from Meir and Yocheved, Mrs. Rashi, Nei Rashi, whatever, I don't know, that's probably never last name. One child's name was Yitzchak, who became the Rivam, died relatively early. One child's name was Shmuel. Anyone know who Shmuel became?
Rashbam.
A third child was named Yaakov, who became so great that he was called by his nickname. You know you're great when you have a nickname. And I don't mean because you're a sports celebrity. I mean because you're called by your sefer. Or you're called Rav. Or you're called the Rav. Or you know, you leap above names. So this Yaakov became such a great person, such a great Rishon, that he acquired the name Rabbeinu Yaakov Ish Tam. Because Yaakov is an Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim, Yaakov Avinu, who we visited yesterday. Sends regards to whoever wasn't able to make it. That's personal regards. Yaakov was an Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim, so this Yaakov, the grandson of Rashi, was also an Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim. So he was called, colloquially, Rabbeinu Tam, but his name was Rabbeinu Yaakov. Now, he lives in France. Different places in France, not important to get the details, this town, that town, born in one town, Roussinet, basically in the French Jewish community. He's born in 1100, easy enough to remember. Dies 1171 or so. So it's right dab smack in the middle of the 12th century. Which means, if you're living in France in the 12th century, you have a front row seat to one of the most tragic and difficult events in French Jewish history. And that's, of course, the Crusades. And the Rabbeinu Tam bears the brunt of the Crusades twice. Rashi also, 1096, First Crusade. Rashi refers to the Crusades in one of his pieces in Tanakh. But so the first encounter with Rabbeinu Tam in the Crusades happens in 1146. Now keep in mind, most of these encounters happen spring, summer, early fall. Crusades don't begin in the winter. People don't travel in the winter. So you're basically dealing with that period. It's Shavuos. So it's the period of the Crusades. Remember the three terrible first Crusades, the Magen, Spires, and Worms. They happen in Rosh Chodesh, Sivan, Shavuos. That's in 1096. Now it's 52 years later. There's another crusade making its way through France, and they realize Rabbeinu Tam is not just the leading Torah luminary of his city, but he's the leader. We'll talk about this. The entire Western European Jewish community, which is itself, it's an inapplicable phrase. We'll talk about this in a few minutes. They come into his house, they tear up a Sefer Torah, they rip it, and they grab him, and they take him to the field. And they make five wounds in his head. Why five wounds? Because they want to avenge all the five wounds of Jesus on the cross. Make five head wounds to the Rabbeinu Tam. And they taunt him, and they try to convince him to convert. They engage with his wounded brother Lador. He's 45 years old. They engage with him, trying to convince him to repudiate Judaism. He almost dies. At that point, some rich person comes along, and he partially offers some bribery, gives him five horses in place of the five wounds, and he promises that he'll try to convince this great Torah scholar to convert. And somehow, Rabbeinu Yaakov Ishtam's life is saved on the second day of Shavuos, 1146. Now, it's a little bit later, it's 1171, the year he dies, ironically, and on Chaf Sivan, another terrible, terrible crusade takes place, and some very big Torah giants are killed, and others. Now, 1171, why am I mentioning this? Because Chaf Sivan becomes the Yom Kippur, for Western European Jewry for hundreds of years. It's written in Svarim to fast on Chaf Sivan. The 20th day of Sivan, about 2-3 weeks after Shavuos, many, many, many of your great-grandparents, great-great-great-great-grandparents fasted. It's quoted in Svarim, what to do, what are the halachas of Chaf Sivan? It was referred to as a mini Yom Kippur. And essentially it was the last year of Rabbeinu Tam's life, that second round that he faces with the Crusades. There's an interesting Rabbeinu Tam in Avodah Zarah. And it tells us in Avodah Zarah, is a Jew allowed to commit suicide to prevent being tortured or sodomized? With the starting point, of course, being no. A Jew isn't allowed to take his own life. It's not your life to take. A Kodesh Baruch Hu gives you life. He breathes life into you. You're not taking one on its line. Unfortunately, a person takes his own life. We realize the person was suffering so miserably and so terribly that they committed an avera. So we don't in any way criminalize the person, Chas v'Shalom. The person, a very hard time, is brought to the point they couldn't live under that pressure. But the act is not just murder, it's worse than murder. You're robbing a family, so there can't be any misunderstanding about that. But obviously a person reaches a point in their life where he was unable to withstand the psychological pressure, which is unbelievable. Rabbeinu Tam defends suicide as a preventative measure for worse suffering. Quote certain sources, as you know, the ships of boys and girls that were taken by the Romans, which we commemorate and speak about during our kinos, is Navi Chatasi. He lived through it. And the reports were, remember the kinos you said 2 months ago, where fathers would slit the throats of their boys in the streets of France and say, Lo zachinu legadelchem l'tara. We didn't have the opportunity to teach you Torah. Nakrivchem kekorban ola. Let's offer you as a sacrifice. So Baruch Hashem, we live in a world in which you have the right and the ability to study Torah freely, with support, a family, of communities. Baruch Hashem in Eretz Yisrael. Don't take that for granted. Many children before you didn't reach that stage. 70 Talmidim learn in front of Rabbeinu Tam. 70 Talmidim who are likened to 70 Rabbavaji Yosefs. Imagine 70 Rabbavaji, 70 Shlomo Zalman sitting in a room being taught Torah by the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam teaches 4 major, major French Gedolim. The one you probably should know most about, and I'll tell you why, is a man named Eliezer from the town of Metz, who writes a list of mitzvahs called Sefer HaYoreim. Why is he important? Follow the trail. Rabbeinu Yaakov teaches Rabbeinu Eliezer of Metz. Rabbeinu Eliezer of Metz teaches Rabbi Eliezer, the Rav Yah. The Rav Yah teaches Rabbeinu Yitzchak, the Or Zeruah. Rabbeinu Yitzchak teaches Meir, the Marami Rottenberg. The Rabbeinu Marami Rottenberg teaches Rabbeinu Asher, the Rush. Rabbeinu Asher teaches his son, Rabbeinu Yechiel, the Tor. How do you get from Rashi to the Tor? That's the trail. Rashi teaches his grandson, who teaches Eliezer, Sefer Yoreim, who teaches the Rav Yah, Rabbeinu Eliezer, who teaches Rabbeinu Yitzchak, the Or Zeruah, who teaches the Marami Rottenberg, who teaches the Rush, who teaches the Tor. Where are you in this whole parade? Who taught you? Who taught your teachers? Who will you teach? And who will they teach? You have to know how to move along the line of the Masara. You know, the Talmidim, Rabbeinu Shimshon of Shans, also one of the Baalei Tosfos. Bechor Shor, Ben Yosef Bechor Shor, a famous commentary on Chumash. The Rihalavan, lesser known Baalei Tosfos. When Rabbeinu Tam dies, it's so traumatic, he was such a central figure, that one of his students, who is a Kohen, one of the Baalei Tosfos named Reb Chaim Kohen, not one of the primary ones, but he appears here and there, said that if he would have been there at the point of death, he would have personally buried his Rebbe. Even though a Kohen is not allowed to become Tumbe. That's how gargantuan the Rabbeinu Tam was seen in his era. And a lot of our reports of the Rabbeinu Tam and his greatness stem from the Rivash. The Rivash is a 14th century Rabbeinu Yitzchak Bar Sheshes, leading Gadol. So he's speaking about someone that lived 200 years before him, giving us reports. It would be like someone asking you, one day your children will ask you, it's now 2070. Tell us who Reb Chaim was. Tell us who the Netziv was. Come on now, but you lived in 2015. You're about 100 years after the Netziv. Tell us who Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was. Tell us who Levi Yitzchak was. Tell us who... Here's the Ribash, writing in his Tshuvos who the Rabbeinu Tam was in the 12th century, based on all the Masaras that the Ribash had received from his Rebbes, and they received from his Rebbes. Who was Rabbeinu Tam? I have a couple of quotes for you. Ribash calls Rabbeinu Tam someone who is greater than anyone in Torah since the close of the Gemara. So he's placing the Rabbeinu Tam back in the year 500. No one knew Torah like Rabbeinu Tam. Very few people knew Torah like Rabbeinu Tam since the year 500. Pretty impressive. He was like, is how the Ribash describes Rabbeinu Tam. You can liken him, he says, to Rabbeinu Chanana, year 1000. To Rashi, to the Rif. Some pretty big company to keep. And he also calls him the undisputed leader of his generation, and we'll get back to that a little bit later. So that's when the Rabbeinu Tam lived, what he lived through, who his Talmidim were, and what he was likened to. Now, what is he known for? A couple things. First of all, he makes a string of takanos. Not since Rabbeinu Gersha Meir HaGola, who is his grandfather's Rebbe's Rebbe. Not since Rabbeinu Gersha Meir HaGola, who instituted several well-known takanos against polygamy, against divorcing your wife involuntarily, against reading people's mail. Rabbeinu Tam issues several decrees, most of them to protect women and advance their cause. So first of all, you can't divorce your wife without just cause. You have to bring it, even if it's voluntary, you have to say, this is the reason, that's the reason. Once a get is given, no one can question it. You can say, oh, maybe it's not written, ein ma'aron achar get. You can imagine a scene. Oh, you bring the get to the next town, maybe this is possible. Then this woman is locked in Yigunahood for her life. Because based on sitting there deliberating. Ein ma'aron achar get. Once it's given, you trust the Rav, and you move forward. Most famously, it was very common, unfortunately, for women to die early in the marriage. You can imagine, Crusades coming through. You can fill in the blanks. Young women, newly married women. Now, aside from the terrible tragedy, there were also great economic consequences. Why? Because if I know my daughter may not make it to an extended part of the marriage because of difficult historical conditions, I don't know if I want to give her a pretty big dowry. Because I'm going to mortgage the ranch, hand it to some man who's going to be married to my wife maybe a year or two, and then he'll get the money. So if I'm not offering a big mortgage, her prospects for marriage are declining. That's the sad scene in Western Europe in the 12th century. So Rabbeinu Tam makes a takana, probably his most famous takana, referenced in all the tshuvos. If a married woman dies within 1 year of the wedding, the dowry goes right back to her family. It's an insurance policy, which means that the families are much more willing to offer dowries, as in the case of a terrible, tragic death, money will flow back and the economic system will equalize. It's an economic measure, but it basically encourages marriages and weddings. But otherwise, people won't get married. It's hard enough to get married in Western Europe in that period. You're living in small little towns. The pool of people to marry is not great. You're not looking at these large hundreds of thousands of Jews, 50 people in this town, 2,000 in that town. So you're trying to create a stabilization. Yes, Ethan, what do you want to say?
Isn't it for you pay the husband is the wife's father,
Now, the husband inherits the wife. Yerushas Tabal Min HaTorah. So whatever the wife had, the husband inherits.
When? Yeah, never mind.
There are certain other halachas in Torah, but the dowry is inherited by the husband, al pi halacha. Which brings us to another point. Sephardic Jewry was always more centralized and solid than Ashkenazic Jewry. Based on the fact that by and large, with exceptions, and certainly there are major exceptions in the 12th century, 100 years later, Islamic fundamentalism chases the Rambam out of Spain, has to hightail it over to Egypt and Israel. And by and large, if you take a large assessment, Jews in Islamic countries, by and large, are living more peacefully with greater tolerance, greater support. By and large, 12th century, 13th century, 14th century, Jews in Ashkenazic lands are on the run, are oppressed, are being murdered. Of course, it's about to change in the latter part of the 15th century, the great, great tragedy of the Spanish Inquisition. Spanish or Sephardic Jews. But by and large, Jews in Ashkenazic territories are living much more dispersed, which means you don't have the consolidation of the Rif becoming the central figure and the Rambam and the Ramban, and got different little cantons. Jews in England and Jews in Vienna and Jews in France and Jews in Italy and Germany. You've got Jews living in smaller communities without consolidation of authority and halachic authority. If there's one person during the medieval period who consolidates authority in his day and is known across Germany, even parts of Italy, which is quasi-Sephardic, Vienna, England, all of France, it's Rabbeinu Tam and his Beis Din. Everyone defers to Rabbeinu Tam and his Takanos. He calls his Beis Din the Beis Din HaGadol of France. It's clear that Rabbeinu Tam's Takanos are unquestionable. You can't challenge them. And it's very fleeting, it's very passing, but it's an interesting period. One could call it, despite all the oppression and crusades, one could call it the glory days of Western European medieval Jewry. Again, it's hard to say that because of so much blood spilt, but in terms of a functioning, organic whole with communities looped together under one person's consolidated authority and psak is psak, it's probably the Rabbeinu Tam who comes closest to that. You don't have it. Maybe a couple generations later, the Maharami Ruttenberg becomes that figure. Maybe, but certainly Rabbeinu Tam establishes that. Which leads to another very, very interesting difference between Ashkenazic Jewry and Sephardic Jewry. An important genre for Sephardic Torah is not just the commentary on the Gemara or Sefer of Halachic Edicts, but Shelos V'Tshuvos, Responsa. The Rashba writes 8 volumes of Tshuvos, and he records them all. Thousands and thousands of Tshuvos. In Ashkenazic lands, for some reason, partially because of the helter-skelter nature of the communities and the lack of one central authority, you don't really have collected Tshuvos in these centuries. A few Tshuvos of Rashi, a few Tshuvos, you don't really have the Rashba's Tshuvos, the Ramban's Tshuvos, the Rambam's Tshuvos. But the Rabbeinu Tam collected his Tshuvos in a Sefer called Sefer HaYashar. Rabbeinu Tam. It's not a Musar Sefer, it's an actual Sefer of Halachic Tshuvos. Sefer HaYashar. And it's really written by the Rabbeinu Tam, unlike most of Tosfos. One of the great, great, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, one of the most unfortunate accidents of history is that Tosfos wasn't written by the people who gave the Chiddushim. It was written scrawling, fragmented by their Talmidim. That's why it's so hard to read Tosfos. It's hardest Sefer in Shas to read. As we'll see later, it's so central. But Rabbeinu Tam actually wrote his Tosfos in, or his Chiddushim and his Tshuvos, in a Sefer called Sefer HaYashar, in part because he was such a central figure and he was conscious of the fact that his Tshuvos would be quoted and applied, so he actually writes Tshuvos, which is very, very rare from this period. Okay, just in case we forget, what are the, I guess, 2 most famous Shitos of the Rabbeinu Tam? Which 2 Shitos become embedded in history? Oh, you do like Rabbeinu Tam.
Tefillin.
Machlokas Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. There's a legend, I'm not sure it's true, that Rashi was holding his little grandson in his arms, and his grandson touched Rashi's tefillin shorosh. Yeah. We're davening for the day where you'll be wearing tefillin all day. Think about that the next time you take your tefillin off before davening's over. I'm a big believer in the small things in life. You can't always manage the large things, but you can manage the small things. A good habit to break here in yeshiva? We're supposed to wear a tefillin all day. Sadly enough, we can't, because we can't keep our physical and mental focus. So we scale it back to 45 minutes. I don't want to be a double scaler. Okay, 45 minutes, and then I'll scale it back, and I'll start taking them off in a later. There'll be times in life you'll have to take your tefillin off, because you're rushing in trains and planes and boats, but not now. So if you can, if you're not rushing out, try to keep it on. It's your tefillin. You want to keep the Sefer Torah in your body as long as our common practice is. Whether it's true or not, anyone know the difference between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam tefillin? Rashi's parshios follow? The sequence of the Torah. Kadesh, v'hayaki v'yacha from bo, shema v'hayim shema. Benu Tam's tefillin, Shkadesh, Mariki Yivyacha, V'hayam Shemara ben Shema. So Hayam Shemara leaps backwards before Shema. Shema is in Beschanan, V'hayam Shemara is in Ekef. He flips the order for all sorts of reasons. The Rav has a beautiful, beautiful pshat. Shulchan Aruch says everyone should wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, but then he says, oh, if you're a Reish Shemayim, and most poskim base themselves, if you'd walk around a Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, it's almost as if you are projecting yourself as too pious. It's called yuhara. You're trying to show off your religion. That's why most people don't wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. In Hasidic circles, it's become much more accepted to carry two pairs of tefillin and then put a Rabbeinu Tam tefillin afterwards. Not a bad thing. It's not done in a way that's preening and exhibitionist. Why not? What's the other famous sheet of Rabbeinu Tam? Zmanim. Most Rishonim feel that says is a couple minutes, 20 minutes, 13 minutes of Rabbeinu Tam, close to an hour, 72 minutes after. But I hold Rabbeinu Tam Shita, means you're ending Shabbos a lot later, and in theory, maybe starting Shabbos a lot later. One day you may be on the road, and all of a sudden there's a traffic jam, or a blizzard, or both, and a flat tire, Chas V'Shalom, and it's Friday, which never happened, try to leave earlier. And you quickly call up your Rav, and Rebbe, what should I do? I may not make it. Some will say, well, you definitely go until Shkia, right? You have to make it when Luch benching is on Lachas Nero, so you have that extra 18 minutes. But some will say, you know what? Hold Rabbeinu Tam tonight. Which means the Shabbos gets in a lot later. Don't try this at home without speaking to a rabbi. Don't start calculating on your own. But you may want to ask the Rav, oh, I'm stuck in somewhere in the middle of nowhere. If you're stuck in Alon Shvut, so make Shabbos and Alon Shvut, nothing wrong. But if you're stuck in the middle of nowhere and it's dangerous, okay, keep Rabbeinu Tam. The real answer is get out of your car an hour earlier. The real answer is don't get caught in that. Really, get out of the car, get into a cab, it's not Eretz Yisrael. Pay the cab driver if you can, or if not, offer a money, call ahead, and let him just take it. Just in terms of safety. If it's safety, what? Just let the guy do the driving, it's a Drabbanan, so for Drabbanan, you're allowed to, if you can't walk, obviously. Okay, now, the big thing, of course, that I want to discuss today in 2 minutes or less is, of course, Rabbeinu Tam, not just who he was and what he was responsible for, but Rabbeinu Tam as the leading member of Tosfos. What did Tosfos change? What was Tosfos' grand revolution? The grand revolution of Tosfos was, and this is something which is internal to your thought, it's so brisker, it's more brisker than brisker. Torah is one integrated whole. Shas is one integrated logic. If you find two sugyos that clash, the answer is not it's a machlokas of sugyos. The answer is there's one common theme, and I will use, look at my hands, that contrast, that clash, as the sparks to create new categories and new ideas. So I can make the two sugyos. Oh, this sugyos is talking about this application, and this sugyos. It's natural. That's how you think. It's Rav Chaim institutionalized. Two halachos, two gedarim, two different cat. People didn't think, or at least didn't articulate until Tosfos came along. It's a basic assumption. Shas may seem clashing and inconsistent. It isn't. And that's why, listen carefully, people don't understand this. That's why Tosfos' best ally was an Ukimta. Oh, that Gemara, which seems to clash with our Gemara, it's only talking about this specific case. Now, an outsider would say, that's intellectually dishonest. The Gemara says one thing, and you're saying it only applies to a particular case of Ukimta. But if you know Shas well enough, and you assume consistency, so you don't just read the text, you read the context. I'll give you an example. Yaakov is sitting in front of me. You know I love you. You're a great guy. If a Targum called Yaakov a dog, you know me better. You must have meant he's really cool, and you know, he's a toy. If you will understand what I meant, you will reinterpret the words based on knowing me, based on body language. That's called contextual reading. So you know the Gemara issues this brave, broad statement, and Tosfos says, oh, that's talking about this case, because logic would change in this case, because Tosfos is assuming two cases are integrated, and you don't speak in two sides of your mouth. They knew it well enough that they could just snap their fingers out. The Gemara said in this case, because the logic would change based on the parameters of the logic. It's such a fundamental concept, the Torah and Shas. And it wasn't as clearly developed. It was intuitive to many, but it wasn't as clearly developed until Baalei HaTosfos came along and asserted it, and at their head was Rabbeinu Tam. And it led to a lot of very, very interesting decisions. One of the Baalei HaTosfos, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, wrote a sefer called Sefer HaTshuva. How can we not just learn Gemara based on this new revolutionary way of thinking, not revolutionary new, but revivalist, to taking things that people thought about but aren't able to articulate it. How does that change halacha? So he wrote a sefer called Sefer HaTrumah. A lot of Bali tells us they have to write halachic svarim to update the halachic process based on what's happening in the field of what we call lamdas and how people are reading shas. How does this change? Hilchos shechita, hilchos yayin nesach, hilchos tefillah b'mikvah. People are writing halachic sefers to update. This is the major, major change of Bali Tosos. At the helm of this whole movement is Rabbeinu Yaakov Ishtam, one of the greats. Rabbeinu Yaakov Ishtam, El Sheva Holim. See you guys later at 6:15.